Hello, spooky friends and fam, and welcome back to That Spooky Life. I'm your host, Miranda, as always, and I am super happy that you have joined us today. So we just got through with Christmas and Yule and the holidays. Obviously, there are still a couple of nights of Yule happening, and I hope that you all are enjoying the holiday season with much needed relaxation and good times with friends and family. Welcome back to the spooky side of everything. And I tried really hard this week to find some holiday-themed stories, and nothing really came to me. So I decided instead what we were going to do is I'm going to tell you a story from some early summer shenanigans before school let out, etc. And this is actually a very old story. One of my first profound moments, as it were, with my abilities. I was about 6 years old, and my siblings and I were homeschooled. All of my siblings are younger, so if I was six, obviously they were much younger than that, and that does play a factor in the story. We were homeschooled most of our lives, except for 1 year, actually. That 1 year when both of my parents and my grandmother, who was a substitute teacher, had to work, is actually when I met Diana, my author friend, who I have mentioned numerous times on this show. Other than that 1 year, we were all homeschooled, but that didn't mean that we got any kind of like easy ride, because my grandmother was a teacher, my mother was a teacher. And we had field trips, book reports, the whole nine yards, minus being like in class with a bunch of other kids. It was just siblings. And we were all in different grades, but there was a lot of similar work that we did just to make things easier. So when we would be studying things like a particular period in history, we would all be studying that same period in history. There would just be a different expectation based on, you know, whatever grade of the child who was producing the work. So I always had a higher expectation than either of my younger two siblings at the time, but that's because I was in a higher grade. And occasionally we would do things. I remember for a sort of like an art history class, we did mythology, and we each got to pick a mythology that we wanted to write a report on. We all picked different mythologies, but again, the expectation was set based on age and grade. So when we would do things like go on field trips to things at the library or local museums, like we went to Tellus when I was little, because it is in the area that we lived at the time, we would all have to write reports. It would just be, you know, different kinds. So one of these field trips that happened when I was homeschooled was we went to the Etowah Indian Mounds in Bartow County. Now, for those who may not be familiar with the Etowah Indian Mounds, from the GeorgiaStateParks.org/Etowah Indian Mounds site, home to several thousand Native Americans from 1000 AD to 1550 AD, this 54-acre site protects six earthen mounds, a plaza, village site, burrow pits, and defensive ditch. Etowah Indian Mounds is the most intact Mississippian culture site in the Southeast. Artifacts in this museum show how natives of this political and religious center decorated themselves with shell beads, paint, complicated hairdos, feathers, and copper ear ornaments. Hand-carved stone effigies weighing 125 pounds still bear some original pigments. Objects are made of wood, seashells, and stone are also displayed. So, this is a huge historical site in the state of Georgia and in the county that I lived as a kid. It is obviously a historically protected site, and there is a museum with a lot of these artifacts, and this was the subject that Mom decided we were going to be learning about, both just Native American history of the area in general and specifically the Indian Mounds. And I talked to her to make sure, and I believe I was about six. I don't know how in-depth any of these reports were going to be based on that. However, that was the case. It was an official homeschool field trip that we went out there. I know it was towards the end of the year because it was warm, but it wasn't hot necessarily. So I think it was probably late April, maybe early May. we went out, and the first thing that you do is you go through the museum. And this was the first time I remember having ever seen anything that I am aware of that was as old as the artifacts in that museum. And that was just awe-inspiring to me. I was wide-eyed looking at all of this really cool stuff that was from, to my six-year-old brain, an incomprehensibly long time ago. But I knew it was old, 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 because it felt old, 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 old. Sometimes old things just have a weird feel to them because they're old. Other times, old things have a weird feel to them because there's something else going on. And being surrounded by so much of that, I didn't understand it at the time, but I felt very uncomfortable. It was very claustrophobic just because there was so much going on in that museum around me. And I found that a lot of times in museums that still happens, but I know what it is and I know better how to shield and dodge that nowadays. We went through the museum and I discovered I had a love of old things despite all of the weird feelings. And then afterwards, we go out actually to the mounds, and there's a trail that you can walk around and see them. And I was very excited for this because looking at these mounds, it was really cool because they're covered in grass. And they're almost like square hills that have a plateau atop, because it's where they would, you know, bury their dead, and then they would just build on top of it, and you know, the mounds are different heights, you know, etc. And it's very, honestly, a cool structure to see, especially that young, when you're not used to seeing anything like that. And they were so big to my memory. I'm sure if I go back now, I'm going to be like, oh, this is not nearly as big as I remember it being. To my memory, they were so, so big. And it was just one of those things where I was like, oh, this must be what Indiana Jones feels like, you know? The love of history that I hold in my heart and my love of old things, there's probably multiple explanations for it, but that was the first time I remember actually having it. And yet, everything felt strange. I didn't really completely understand at the time what a burial mound was, because I didn't fully, at the time, understand what death was, because I was very, very young. So the idea of climbing up to the top of the burial mound with the staircases that they have for you to do so didn't actually click with me what would be happening at that point, that I would be standing atop layers upon layers of history and remains, etc. So we get out to the mounds, and there's immediately seeable two smaller mounds and then the larger one that I believe is called the Chieftain's Mound, but that I don't remember off the top of my head. That just came to me. But the tallest mound out there nearest to the museum, I looked up at it and thought I had never seen anything larger in my entire life. So I, being heap big, brave Indiana Jones explorer, wanted to climb up to the top. While my siblings, being very, very young, had no interest in doing that, and neither did my parents have any interest in taking them up to it. So my dad volunteers to stay at the bottom while my mom decides she'll take me to the top. Well, I insist that my grandmother goes as well, because I wanted it to be mom, daughter, grandma, and standing at the top of the world and looking around for all the world to see. And that was my idea. So both my mother and my grandmother did not have the best knees. My mom from sports injuries in high school, and my grandmother just because she was older, obviously, at that time. Well, my grandmother agrees, sort of begrudgingly, and we start up the steps. And once again, to my memory, that was a lot of steps, like more steps than I had ever done in my entire 6 years of living, probably. So we get up to the top, and even I'm winded for a second. I sit down, and there's only 1 to 3 other people up there. It's very vague in my memory, and it's not that it's vague, it's confusing in my memory, and that will become apparent as to why soon. But I sit down for a second and catch my breath. And my grandmother finally catches up because mom and I made it up there first. And she sits down. And so I start walking out to the edge and I see that, you know, it's not terribly, I mean, it's steep, but it's not terribly steep. So I'm not afraid of being up high because I could technically just roll down the hill and be okay. And I see for so far around, I see the river on the other side. I see the other mounds. I see the tops of the trees. Like, it was really cool. But I keep getting this itchy feeling and I didn't understand until I turned around to say something to my mother. My mom was reading a plaque and my grandmother was sitting on the bench that was at the top, and it felt really, really crowded up there. And it was weird because I felt like I would be bumping into people, but there was not many people up there. Hence why I don't really remember how many were actually up there, but I know it wasn't very many. It certainly wasn't a crowd, and it felt like a crowd. And I started trying to figure out, why do I feel this way? There's nobody up here, but there is. There are people up here, and I see all of these people standing around the edge of the mound. And they were Native American, and they weren't there, but they were, and I knew that. And they were, you know, transparent, and they were looking at us very disapprovingly. And I began to get very, very uncomfortable. Now, I will say, the Etowah Indian mounds, to my memory, they are very respectful. They handle things with the utmost care and follow all regulations and rules for how to do things. And I remember my mother saying something about how she was impressed at the care with which they give everything and documentation and all of that. But it still felt very unwelcoming to be in at the top, as it were, of the tallest mound in the area. And I started to get very uncomfortable and very scared. So I walk over to my mom and I'm like, Mom, I don't think we should be here. And I don't know what the look on my face looked like. And there were very few times. Some, you know, my mom was really good about talking us through stuff, being like, why do you feel a certain way? You need to think about why you're angry. You need to think about why you're sad. You know, she was very, very good at talking us through things so that we were more self-aware and could actually gauge our responses appropriately. Well, whatever the look on my face was when I said to her, Mom, I don't think we should be here. My mother looks down, blinks at me, and says, okay, then we'll go. We walk back over to my grandmother, and my mom says, all right, we're going back down. She wants to go back down. And I will never forget, my grandmother looked at me, and she was like, we just got up here. You're not going to spend a little more time? And my mom said, Mom, she wants to go. She doesn't want to be here. And I looked at my grandmother and said, we shouldn't be here. And my grandmother looked at me a second, blew out her mouth like, rolled her eyes and stood up and said, well, I guess we'll go then. And we came back downstairs and my dad was like, well, that was quick. Mom's like, well, she got freaked out. He was like, it's pretty high, isn't it? It wasn't the fact that it was high, but I didn't know how to verbalize that to my dad at the time. And I barely knew how to verbalize it to my mother. I didn't really. I just told her I didn't want to be there anymore, basically. And as I looked back up, they were still watching, but it was far less disapproving at that point. It was, thank you for hearing us. Thank you for sort of following the unspoken request. And 6-year-old me is just like, yeah, I want to be as far away from this flat hill as I possibly can be right now. So after that, we had a picnic and we ate the picnic down by the Etowah River and ran around and had a good time. Nothing else to my recollection really happened while we were there, though I will say it felt like we were sort of being watched from the trees. And I'm not sure, I don't think it was just us. I think that's probably just something that happens. And it could have been the time of year. I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. This is one of the first times I've thought about this story in a very, very long time and probably merits more investigation on my part. After all, it is a museum and a historical park, etc. So I'll go back and do a follow-up episode at some point in the future. But that's one of the few very vivid memories in my life that stands out for when I try to think about, you know, when did this start for me? When did the mediumship happen? So on and so forth. There were a couple earlier on, but that is definitely one of the things that I cannot deny in my memory. And I've talked to my mother about it since. And she's like, yeah, I had no idea what freaked you out, but I knew it wasn't the height because you were walking up to the edge with no problem. You just stopped and looked around like you were looking at something that I couldn't see. Your face paled and you came over to me and said, Mom, we shouldn't be here. So you know what? When a 6-year-old looks you in the eye and says, Mom, we shouldn't be here, I figured it was probably a pretty good idea to go ahead and go. And that was my mother's awesome wisdom, which I plan to take very much to heart. If my little one ever looks at me and says, Mom, we shouldn't be here, I'm going to be like, all right, we're gone. We're gone and we're probably not coming back. Let's go. That is my spooky story for the week. So speaking of my author friend Diana, I bring you guys another delightful story today from her wealth of personal experiences. And this one actually happened very recently to her, apparently. I am very excited to share it. Thank you for letting me read this on the podcast, Diana. It actually happened initially in chat, and I was like, you know what I'm going to ask you? And she's like, yeah, absolutely, use it. I was like, sweet, thank you. So here we are. Diana writes, yay for new ghostly encounters in the mountains. So my husband and I are house sitting in the mountains right now for my husband's boss. Well, she has one of those doors that you can lock and avoid entry from the outside, but you can still open from the inside. So we didn't know the door was locked when we went out to smoke. Well, you guessed it. We got locked out. Ugh, I'm so sorry. And we are talking rich lady's house. When I say boss, I mean owner of his company. So, anywho, we are locked out, no way to get in, no tools to try and pop the lock on the door, nothing. Our phones are inside, so there is no message his boss and say, hey, send us a locksmith either. So yeah, pretty screwed. Well, I'm checking the windows, hoping one is open, maybe unlocked, and nothing. We're standing at the door trying to figure out how to get back inside, and I say, too bad the spirit in the house can't unlock doors. So John tries the door again, and it came right open. Now, I saw this spirit Wednesday night when we got there. It was standing at the foot of the stairs. When I noticed it, I said, wow, you're sneaky. I didn't even feel you. So I watched it go upstairs, and I hadn't seen it since. We come in, and I see this energy go up the stairs again. So I'm like, thanks. My husband turns to look at me, and he's like, I don't know what I just witnessed, but that's cool as shit. LOL. Yes, that is cool as shit. I have never had a spirit do something like that for me. That is awesome. Finally, she says, his empathy is nowhere near what mine is, so it's funny when I catch it and he doesn't. But that time, apparently, he at least caught a little bit of it. Like, let's be real, because a spirit just unlocked a door for you. That's so cool. I'm super stoked about that. I would love to be. I kind of want to go to this house now. I mean, obviously, it's probably not an option because it's a private home, but the closest thing like that that I've ever happened to me was I was locked out by a spirit at a friend's house. God, it was over 10 years ago at this point, and this house had so much going on with it. There was so much wrong with it. Just so much wrong with it. I will say I am actually working on the episode where I introduce this house. I will make sure to add that little tidbit in there to explain further. But having a spirit unlock the door for you when you are just completely out of options, that is really cool. And thank you for sharing that story. And that is our listener story for the week. Short and sweet, but recent and very neat. So I know it's a little bit of a shorter episode today, but though you are joining me after Christmas and Yule and all of the fun shenanigans, I am actually recording this a little bit beforehand so that I can actually be off for the holiday, as I'm sure everyone else loves to be as well. So I apologize that this is a little bit shorter than normal. I'm still working on collecting some listener stories and getting some more on that. So if you have a listener story you would like to submit, please send it to thatspookylifepodcast@gmail.com. I am always accepting spooky stories. I am always looking forward to all the crazy fun stuff that happens to you guys and the and living those spooky lives that we share. So please feel free, send them in. In closing, I would like to share a sort of thematic witchy tip that I have this week that honestly you don't have to be a witch. It doesn't really matter what belief structure you have, or even if you don't particularly have one, if you're pleasantly agnostic or, you know, solidly atheist, etc. There's a lot of things that I think play into it, and my witchy tip for you is to listen to your gut. Both my instinct at even six, and my mom's at the same time, and Diana's about the spirit in the house in her story. All of those are things that we sort of just listened to our intuition and went with it. There's a lot of things, there's a lot of science behind it. The way that we interpret micro expressions from people, even if we're not consciously aware of it. There's pheromones and different things that we may not, like I'm not going to sit here and go, I smell that. That is a pheromone of fear or something of the sort. That's not something that you consciously do, really. But whatever it is that fuels our intuition, be it genetic memory, pheromones, micro-reactions and expressions, things that our brain picks up on that are terribly, terribly subtle, that we don't understand why we don't want to go in that building, or I'm not sure why I knew I had to be in that bookstore at that time, or I don't know why I felt like calling my best friend and then found out that they had just been in a car accident or something. You know, there's a lot of things in life that you sort of try to discard because of rational thought or, oh, that seems silly. But intuition is there to help us survive, really, more than anything. And it can be a wonderful tool and a wonderful gift that we naturally have in order to learn and discover and sometimes save a life, probably maybe even your own. So my witchy tip for you is practice listening to your intuition. If you have a knee-jerk reaction to something, take a step back. Try to figure out, is this an emotional trigger from something that's happened in my past? Is this something that I can explain and understand where it's coming from? Or is this an intuitive reaction that something else may be going on that I'm not seeing? If you walk into a house and you immediately want to do a pivot turn and walk back out the door, figure out why. Was it something you saw out of the corner of your eye? Was it the coat behind the door that looked like a person? Or is there nothing behind the door, but it still looked like there was a person? Was it a smell? Was it the fact that the hair on your arms started to stand up from a particular energy in the house? Things like that. Why is it that I don't want to walk on the other side of the street? What would happen if I walked on the other side of the street? Why is it that I don't particularly care for this stretch of road when I'm driving? What is it that happened here? Sometimes you can also research and see, you know, the history of an area. Why is it that perhaps this area gives off a weird vibe? What is it about it? Is it something visual? Is it something intuitive? If you start asking those questions and start trying to sort of separate if you start trying to actually analyze a reaction and separate the doing from the why am doing, as it were, apparently I'm speaking in Icahn has cheeseburger language now. If you start actually self-analyzing those things when they occur and take a look at what spawned this, what inspired this in your mind, you will be able to better discern your reality. Honestly, I can't tell you how many times in my life, I'm a very naturally distracted individual. I'm constantly thinking about a next project, a next drawing that I want to do. I was diagnosed with ADD fairly young. I have had to learn different coping mechanisms in order to be able to focus. So naturally, I am a very distracted individual. And if there is one phrase that my mother basically tattooed on my soul and probably said until she was blue in the face and hoarse, it was, Miranda, you have to pay attention, in that exact diction. And I probably sound like my mom right now. But not only did it help me with an actual chemical brain issue that I have, being the ADD, it also made me very discerning and critical in my thought processes. I needed to figure out, am I distracted because I'm just letting my mind float? Am I distracted because there's something actually to be distracted by? Am I distracted because there's one of the weird things that I know is there but nobody else can see, etc.? And personally, I found that it is not an easy thing to hone. It is not an easy thing to learn. And it has taken a great many years to get it anywhere near the fact that I am comfortable and used to it. It took me a very, very long time to not have to put active, thoughtful energy into it. And I still have to actively do it. It just doesn't take quite as much energy anymore because I have it as a rote habit. Paying attention to your intuition, paying attention to your internal reactions and analyzing where those things are coming from can be so, so useful and is a very important part of not only being, you know, a witch, if that is your path, but a huge part of being human. You can avoid arguments with your friends, your family, your spouses, if you realize that your reactions may not be a reaction to something they're doing, but something previously, or you're being affected by your environment. Intuition is that gut feeling that you get at certain times, something's not right here, or, oh my goodness, this is it. And I encourage anyone listening to just take some quiet time and sit back and listen to yourself, listen to your mind, quiet the TV, quiet the radio, take away distractions, and get in touch with the inner you. Get in touch with the part of you that is connected to the world fundamentally, and just see what it has to say. Start listening to the intuition. Start trying to discern information and details and see where it takes you. Because I don't think where it would take you would be anything that would be considered a bad place. Self-awareness is key and a very important part to being the best you that you can be. I think one of the first steps on that path is listening to your intuition and being honest about source and critical about what you have learned from it. So, thank you for tuning in this week. Again, if you have a spooky story that you would like me to read on the podcast, please send it to thatspookylifepodcast@gmail.com. You guys can follow me on Instagram at thatspookylifepodcast. Click likes and have a good time. So if you are into the social media life and enjoy that stuff, come follow me. We'll have a spooky time together on the Insta. Otherwise, I will talk to you guys in the new year. It will be 2020 when our next episode airs. And I am very excited. I hope you guys have a happy and safe New Year's. Fun times for 2020. 2020 is going to be awesome. 2019 has had its ups and downs, and it's had some real low downs for a lot of people that I know. So fingers crossed and all the happy wishes for 2020. I will see you guys on the 3rd. And until then, keep living that spooky life. Bye.